Welcome to Safety Chats. Host Jason Stark, Director of Safety at Baldwin Safety and Compliance, shares decades of aviation experience and a passion for safety. Let's get started with this week's Safety Chat.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Baldwin Safety Chat, a podcast where we talk about safety management, safety in general, or anything in between. But the idea is that give us something to think about, something to ponder, maybe something to put into action to help us do our jobs just a little bit better. Today, I would like to speak a little bit about hazards, and more specifically, the workflow surrounding hazard identification. I'm in a position where I can see basically the workflows that the safety managers do when they're identifying hazards. And we get a lot of variance, I would say, in how hazards are handled within the organization, especially within the Baldwin tool. As you know, the Baldwin just released a new hazard log to kind of help drive hazards to this, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But we see a lot of variance, like I said, in ways that people handle the hazards or deal with the hazards. Let's start at the very beginning. The definition of a hazard, I think, is really important. So the definition of a hazard, according to ICAO, is any condition or object that has the potential, let me say that again, that has the potential to cause or contribute to an aircraft accident or incident. A couple things there. One is the potential. With a hazard, nothing has happened yet, but something could happen because of this particular object or condition. And it's that latter one that I really want to focus on, the condition, or what I would call a scenario. The other thing about that definition, it is ICAO giving this definition, and when ICAO, when they're dealing with safety management, at least when they first were putting on safety management, it was for aircraft operations. So they would say any condition or object that can cause or contribute to an aircraft accident or incident. Generally speaking, when I look at hazards, especially in the organization, I kind of broaden that a little, and I won't focus just on aircraft accidents or incidents. I start, you know, broadening a little bit for any accident or incident. When you look at safety management systems in line service, like in an FBO or even in maintenance, while that definition certainly could still apply, I mean, anything you do that could contribute to an aircraft accident or incident, we're also concerned about aircraft damage or even people getting hurt or equipment damage. So we have to kind of broaden the scope a little bit on the definition of a hazard. Again, any object or condition that has the potential to cause or contribute to an accident or incident. We'll just say that, and I'll leave aircraft out just for the sake of this discussion. The other thing I want to focus on too is the condition. ICAO says object or condition. Object obviously is what it says. It's an object that can cause or contribute to an aircraft accident. Incident. One of the examples that are given is like a tree at the end of the runway, or a cord laying across a walkway, although I'd argue that's probably more of a condition, but it's this idea that it's a singular object that can manifest into something bad through our interaction with it. The condition actually creates a scenario. So it's one of those where you can say, well, you have X, Y, and Z, and these things together can lead to this bad outcome. I think that is really a lot more powerful. So it could be the case of a circling approach at night to minimums with a pilot that has less than 100 hours experience in type and at the end of a 14-hour duty day. So I'm imagining some of you, especially with flight experience, you're looking at the situation and you're saying a lot could go wrong there. I mean, that's the idea. It's this condition or this situation that can result in an accident or incident. I think one of the key things there is our interaction with the environment or with a mission or with a job that actually completes the puzzle in terms of a hazard. It's really important to look at these conditions. When we talk about hazard identification, we're talking about looking for these conditions, these scenarios. You might say, well, we do have a lot of hazards in operations. I mean, just operating an aircraft, I mean, being up at, you know, 40,000 feet, or in the case of line service, working around a running propeller, yeah, those are hazardous conditions. And you say, yeah, well, we already have a lot of mitigations in place. And yeah, we do. But there's novel operations and missions that could bring about new hazards just by virtue of us interacting differently with our tools and with our environments. And that's where we have to sit there and say, well, what is it that could happen? So let me rewind it just a little bit. So we talked about the hazard being a condition or object. We talked about what an object is. We talked about a condition, and condition is usually as a result of our interaction or doing something in our work environment that could result in an accident. So when we have these hazards we have to do some things. But before I get there, let's talk about getting the hazards. So in the organization, there's really only two ways. I'm sure some of you can argue that there's probably more, but really only two ways for you to identify or come up with a hazard in the organization. One way is proactively. Somebody in your front line saw a situation or even an object that could lead to a problem, that could lead to an accident or incident. So that's being proactive. Or you yourself going out and evaluating the organization and watching how people are doing work and looking at the processes that are in place. And you could be like scratching your head saying, man, that could go horribly wrong. That's another way. But that's being proactive. So that's the one way. So nothing's happened yet. You're just finding these things through either employee reporting or your own evaluation and your own inspection. Another great way to identify hazards, having like a case study. It's getting some subject matter experts around the table and just sitting down and looking at any particular task or job that you have to do. It could be, okay, well, let's talk about the Aspen approach. It could be, let's talk about fitting that G650 into this hangar. Whatever it may be, you could talk about that and then look at how you're doing work now and how that could be a situation that could contribute to an accident or incident. Another way too, it's a little more vague, but the way that the FAA talks about, especially in Part 5, is you could do the system analysis. So you could look at the way you do work, you could map it out, each process, like in a flowchart, and you could say, okay, well, we're doing this, there's a risk control here, so there's no risk control here, so what could that actually result in? Believe me, we could do a full other podcast on systems analysis. But it's this idea of mapping out what you do and looking at what you do and understanding where are some conditions in what you do that could cause or contribute to an accident or incident. And then one of the other ways, too, that I find fascinating is a mind map or even just writing a narrative of what you do and what you do it with. In the example that I used in the classes I taught, I could say, okay, well, we are a 24/7 global operator operating 6 different aircraft types on demand all around the world, all weather, all times of day. We have 10 full-time pilots. We have 10 contract pilots. We outsource our maintenance. We outsource scheduling. And you could just go on and write this list of what you do and what you do it with. And even from just that example, hopefully you could start, in your mind, you start thinking, okay, well, you're 24/7 global. Wow, what could go wrong with that? So that's kind of the idea. Is that a condition that could cause or contribute or lead to an accident or incident? So the proactive way, obviously, is the best way because nothing's happened. It's what we really want from our front line, especially the people that are out there working, mechanics, line service, flight attendants, pilots. We want them to report, especially from what they witnessed, they saw, well, this doesn't look good, like something could go wrong. You know, if it's arrival, if it's a departure, if it's a certain approach, if it's a certain way that you're fueling aircraft, if it's moving an aircraft in a certain area, towing a certain aircraft, or how aircraft move on the ramp, or if it's a certain job or certain tools you're using, I mean, whatever it is that could lead to an accident or incident, this is what we want to report. The other way that we can receive hazards, and it's not so clean, is something could happen. And that is probably not the best way to get a hazard, but it is a way to get a hazard, and it is a way that we should absolutely have a process for. And that's usually through an investigation. If something happens, we need to look at what happened and then understand the condition that was in place before the accident happened. So if we understand that condition, if we understand what was taking place, here are the facts. You know, the pilot had less than 100 hours of experience in the aircraft. The pilot was very tired. The autopilot was MEL'd. Whatever it may be, you're looking at this condition, and you could say, okay, well, this is how it manifested. But I think it's also important to say, well, how else? If this condition were to ever arise again, how else could it manifest? What do we need to do about it? But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. So we have the hazard, and any system that you have, whether it be paper reports or software, we need to get those hazards, whether it's proactively, people submitting them to us, or whether it's reactively, that through an investigation, we find out the contributing hazard or hazards that were in place. We need to get those in, because once we have them, especially for the proactive ones, now we have a little bit more control. It can say, okay, based on what we do, how could this hazard manifest? What would it look like for this thing to trigger into an accident or incident? What would be the outcome? What would be the severity? What would be the probability of that outcome? And that's where we get into risk assessment. One of the things where we go amiss is a lot of times when we have a hazard, especially if it's a hazard report, we may do the work of assessing the hazard in that report and then file that report away. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just saying I don't know if it's the best way. It's this idea that, okay, somebody submitted to us a hazard, and we go through the motions. We say, ideally, depending on the context the hazard was submitted, whether it be maintenance, flight operations line, whatever, you get some experts around and you say, okay, this is what was identified. What could happen as a result of this? And then hopefully you get some good answers, and then then you ask the further questions. Okay, so you told me what a consequence could be. You told me what could happen. What is the probability of that happen, considering how often we're exposed to this condition, considering just the nature of the consequence itself? What's the probability of this actually happening? And then how bad would that be? Would it be loss of life? Would it be a bruise? Would it be a cut? Would it be aircraft destruction? And that's where we get into the risk assessment. They go through all those motions on that report, assuming that they're doing the full hazard assessment, and then they file the report away. And I think we lose a really good opportunity here. This is the reason for the hazard log in the Baldwin system, at least, and I'm sure other systems also have the notion of a hazard log. But the idea is, if you can do this work on a hazard log, and a hazard log is one place where you document the identified hazards, you document the consequences of those hazards, and then you risk assess those consequences. And then, obviously, the risk assessment helps you to prioritize what you're going to fix. You have a one-stop overview of what's going on in your organization. And you kind of get a profile of the risk, especially if you categorize by departments. You kind of get a profile of the risk in the different departments across your organization. And this is gold, my friends, because now you can start seeing, okay, well, maintenance, they're identifying a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of hazards, and of course we had to do mitigation, but the mitigations only took them to a certain area in tolerable, which tolerable isn't ideal, it just means we're tolerating it. Whereas, flight operations, we have things more in the green. But you can get a sense of the risk topography, if you will, in your organization by using this notion of a hazard log or hazard register or hazard sheet, whatever you want to call it, but putting it all in one spot. So when you put it all in one spot, at any time you can go there and look and say, okay, this was the identified hazard. This is the consequences we thought that could result from this hazard that could manifest. And this is the risk associated with those consequences. And this is what we did about it. We created a new policy. It's in 3.2 of the FOM, and it was last reviewed whenever. And the importance of doing that is that it gives a good place that you can go back and revisit it, because as operations change, the hazard itself may still be present, but in the way that we're operating, if the context changes, that could actually change what consequence manifests. So it's good that we have them all in one spot so that we can go back and look and say, okay, has this changed? And it might even be, does this hazard even exist anymore? For example, if you identified circling approaches as a hazard, and let's say that you had all the controls in place and policies and procedures, let's say, you have to be 200-hour in type to do this, and the weather has to be so-and-so, and the winds have to be so-and-so, and it only has to be during daylight, whatever it might be. And then let's say you remove circling approaches from operations. You say, we're not going to do them anymore. That's a mitigation technique called avoidance. You could go back to your register and say, okay, yeah, well, we identified it. These are still the consequences, but we are no longer exposed to it. And so that could lead you to the controls that you have in place, and you can remove those controls. It's a really good idea that you put these hazards, because what I always like to say when I was teaching this is when you document them down, especially in a ledger like that, in a register, you own them. They're yours now. They're yours to manage. They're yours to control. And that's the idea, right? We want to manage these hazards and the associated risk. And we want to have control over them. So the workflow that I would do is, let's say that somebody submitted a hazard. Somebody submitted a condition or an object that had the potential to cause or contribute to an accident or incident. Again, I'm leaving aircraft out of there, just to broaden it a little bit. If somebody submitted one of those to me, I would take the information and document it in the hazard log. I say, okay, this is the hazard. I document the spot. This is the hazard that was given to me. This is the condition or the object. And then I'd work with people who are knowledgeable in that particular function, or I may even get cross-function, because a hazard could obviously be applicable to many different functions, especially when you get more broad ones like fatigue. But I would say, okay, well, let's see what could happen. What are the consequences of this particular hazard? It might only be one, or it might be 10. Who knows? But it's whatever you come up with. And then work with them to say, okay, well, this is what you said could happen. What's the risk associated with this? What's the probability that this would happen? Again, considering exposure, what's the severity? Based on that, do we need to do anything about it? I'm writing all this down. So I'm writing down, you know, the hazard, the consequences, the initial risk score. If there's mitigation, I'll write in the mitigation box, this is the mitigation. And then we can sit there and say, okay, now considering this mitigation in place, what is the risk now? And obviously that's called the residual risk. And that's something that you also want to document. So what you have now is a complete life cycle, if you will, of that hazard from the time it was submitted to the time it was fully analyzed. So that's the proactive side, and that's a workflow I would do. So I would obviously thank you for the report. I take the information from the report, or even somehow annotate the report number on the hazard log, but I would do the work in the hazard log because this is going to build over time. It's iterative. Now, let's say we had an accident or an incident, which I hope none of you do. We're going to investigate it. Some people like the word investigate. I understand. I get it. But we're going to look into it, if I could say that in a softer way. So we're going to go back and we're going to look at all these conditions, whether you use 5Ys or Taproot or whatever you use. We're going to look at everything that was going on that contributed to this accident or incident. And that's what we want to document. So we may have a list of one thing, or we may have a list of 12 things, whatever it may be, but we want to see, okay, or what was the condition or the object that caused or contributed to this accident or incident. And then once we have those, then I would take those and put those in the hazard log as well. Now, here's the thing, and this kind of goes into risk assessing things that happened. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's a silly notion, but there's no point to it, because if something happened, the probability then is, well, one, it happened. It's there. And then the severity, well, it's right in front of you. You know, whether it be a wing scrape, or whether it be total aircraft destruction, or whether it be, you know, somebody injured, it's right there in front of you. You have the risk score. There is no need to score it because it's right there. But you also have the opportunity to say, okay, well, what else could have happened? How else could have this manifested? Was it just blind luck that it wasn't worse? Could have it been worse? Is there a probability for it to be worse? Is there a consequence that could have happened? It's still important information, especially through the reactive or the investigative side, that whatever you find, any hazards, in this case, would be the condition or the object that caused or contributed to the accident or incident, you would want to get in there, because again, it could be a condition or an object that could cause or could contribute to another accident or incident. So it's very important that we get those in the hazard log. So again, I would do the investigation and then distill these hazards or hazard that was present that caused or contributed to the aircraft accident incident. I put it into the hazard log. You could still reference the accident report or whatever, where it came from. And then again, say, how else could this have manifested, or could have it triggered to? So what we have so far, we've talked about what a hazard is, and we've talked about two pathways, if you will, of getting a hazard, of proactively or reactively. And then we talked about the workflow associated with that. What it boils down to is getting these into a register. For those of you that subscribe to the ISBAO, they call it a safety risk profile. But it's this idea that you've listed all of these potentials in your operation. In this log, you've gone through, you've done the initial risk, and then determined doesn't need to be mitigated. Write the mitigation, put the residual risk. You know, then be able to have it on a cycle where you review it. And it's so interesting, too, because this hazard log, understanding all the hazards and the associated risk with the hazards that you've identified within your operation, can speak to a lot of different things within your safety management system. It can help speak to your flight risk assessment, you know, what you need to audit and what you don't need to audit, or your inspections. So the hazard log itself can speak to a lot, can give you a lot of insight into what's happening within your organization. So definitely, if you're not using the hazard log, somebody submits a report and you do your thing on that report, and the report goes into the same bucket as all the other reports, let's see if we can't put them in a log. If you don't use a software tool, you know, even if it's Excel, but get them in one spot so you can start getting the layout of the organization. Now, here's the thing. If you only come up with one right now, that's fine. This is something that is iterative. So it's built over time through reports, or like I said, through the other methods that we talked about earlier. just start putting them in there as they come. There is no requirement, if we're going to get legalistic about it, there is no requirement as BAO, FAA, or any other such requirement that says you have to have so many hazards identified and listed in your hazard log. But it needs to be continuous. It's kind of the idea of the continuous improvement. So it's not an idea where you do it once and then, okay, well, we'll revisit it next year. No, you want this. You want to continue populating this log at every opportunity you get. Don't force it, because if you force it, obviously you can start putting stuff in there that's really not impacting. But when you get the opportunity to, once you start building this out, sit back for a second and look. Say, oh, wow, hey, this is kind of the profile of my organization. This is interesting. And maybe your department managers will find it interesting as well. So again, it's just something you want to continue doing, that you want to be iterative, and something that I think that will bring a lot of value to your organization. So there you have it. I hope this is helpful. If you have any questions about it, obviously always feel free to contact me. Would love to talk about it more. I just really appreciate you being here and listening. Feel free to drop a line. Let me know if there's anything that you want to talk about or anything else I can do to help you with the excellent calling you guys have in being safety professionals. And definitely hope to see you in the next podcast. Take care, everybody. Stay safe.
This podcast is brought to you by Baldwin Safety and Compliance, the leader in safety management for the transportation industry. Since 2004, Baldwin has been providing state-of-the-art solutions and 24/7 support to the aviation and transportation industries. Baldwin's clients include all sizes and types of transportation operators. Baldwin provides safety and related business services to commercial and non-commercial transportation operators, medical transporters, FBOs, MROs, airports, flight schools, UAS operators, firefighters, OEMs, ground transport operators, and others. Visit BaldwinSMS.com to discover how Baldwin can enhance your organization's safety program.